It was a very powerful night in 2011 when the founder of the Chicago Sinfonietta, Paul Freeman, handed his baton to the next music director, Mayan Chen. It was a program of all women composers. It was very symbolic. It also represents what this mighty boutique orchestra is all about. Their new recording celebrates diverse women composers. It's called Project W. You're going to find out more about this recording and Mayan Chen this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher. I'm speaking with Mayan Chen, the music director of the Chicago Sinfonietta, and they've just released an exciting new recording which features works by diverse women composers. Welcome, Mayan.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
I want to start off by talking about you and how it is that a shy violinist became a conductor. How did that happen?
When my parents wanted to have free concerts at home, and they had my older sister and me both take up an instrument. And little did I know that entertaining my parents on violin and piano were fun, but it wasn't as fun as when I saw the conductor on the podium helping to make the biggest sound. I was age 10, playing violin in the orchestra for the first time. And it was the light bulb moment for me when I thought, why not play the biggest instrument in the room? You can have all these possibilities. And I ran home, I told my parents, I really want to be a conductor. And they frowned and looked very worried and seriously telling me, we don't know where to find your teachers for conducting. And they were absolutely right. So I took the matters into my own hand of coming to rehearsals with my violin parts completely memorized so I could learn from observation. So the conductor looked around. I was the only kid looking up at him, not knowing I was trying to steal his craft at age 10. So the conducting was always something that was a calling. I guess Richard Strauss was right. He said conductors are born, not taught. There's just this innate tendency or ability you want to move with the music. I think a lot of people feel that. But for me particularly, I just want my hands to be able to portray music through gesture. You know, the sound equals the visual part for me. And so life went on. A youth orchestra from America, affiliated with the New England Conservatory, led by Benjamin Zander, went on an Asia tour when I was a teenager. And when they stopped in Taiwan, he happened to hear me play the violin. So he offered me scholarship on the spot, seeing that this Asian kid was really playing out of my heart. It was a form to express my deepest self. I didn't think at that point practicing was the thing to please my parents anymore. It was for myself. So he offered me scholarship to come study violin in Boston. So I had my colleagues at New England Conservatory when I was a undergrad majoring in violin. I would put out Chinese potluck dinners to have them become my guinea pig orchestra so I could practice being a conductor. Or I would always say yes to the composers who needed a conductor for their project. So that's maybe the seed for me in terms of contacting new music, championing for a composer's voice. It was actually through necessity. I just needed the opportunity to practice my art. You know, this is a very catch-22 field. If you don't have enough experience, a lot of people don't hire you as a conductor. And so when I realized the amount of rejection letters were more than the notes I ever conducted, I almost gave up. But, you know, there's always people who are willing to give other people a chance. And so the Portland Youth Philharmonic went about their search very differently. I got my first break leading America's oldest youth orchestra. And from there, I thought I would stay there forever, loving training the next generation of young conductors, making a difference, making music, loving my job, except I have a very practical issue. I couldn't get my green card after 9/11. My lawyer said to me, well, man, you only have two choices because they have changed the rule. Having a doctorate degree not necessarily qualify you for green card. So she said to me, either marry an American, which is quicker to obtain the green card, or go win an international competition. I didn't know which was harder, but I went for the international competition at that point. And I was there at the Nikolai Malko competition in 2005, and there I was. I was hoping to get one of the six prizes, and to my biggest surprise, I became the first woman to ever have won the Malko competition, and it opened doors I never thought possible. And so at that point, I realized I have a choice. I could either stay in Portland, which I love the Pacific Northwest, make a difference locally in that region, or I could walk through this scary door called professional career for a woman conductor. And I said to myself, well, if I never walk through this scary door, I never know how far I can make it to make a bigger impact in the industry I so love. And so I promised myself, no matter how tough it is, I'm going to walk through it. I cried so many days giving up my job in Portland and those 1,000 kids I had during my 5 years. I still view them my PYP kids. They call me, you know, Mama Chan. And so life went from stability to, my goodness, I have no idea what my careers would ended up. Robert Spano, music director of the Atlanta Symphony, alongside with the principal guest conductor, Donald Ronicles, were such dear mentors for me, opened doors I never thought possible. And then Maren Alsop at the Baltimore Symphony founded the Taki Fellowship for Women Conductors. And my career just took off between these wonderful angels that opened doors for me in this country, leading to my music directorship in Memphis for 6 years and Chicago Sinfoniada. So I am living my dream of, you know, an impossible dream that even my family had a hard time imagine, and now it's happening. And so with Chicago Sinfoniada, we have champion for minorities of many kinds. We have even created fellowship called the Project Inclusion Freeman Fellowship in honor of our founder, Maestro Paul Freeman. When I joined the Sinfoniada, I expanded the program to include conductors. Now we have produced 7 fellows. Every one of them has secured a professional position in the country. So you name it. I mean, you see them everywhere. Right there where you are, Minnesota Orchestra, Rodri Cox was one of our first fellow. San Diego Symphony, Jacksonville Symphony, Fort Worth Symphony, Pacific Symphony, Charleston Symphony. We're making a big impact. I like to call the Chicago Sinfoniada the mightiest boutique orchestra in the country in terms of being able to make a tremendous impact with our limited resources.
I would love for you to share the story of when the founder, Paul Freeman, handed his baton to you, because it was very symbolic on many levels.
Absolutely. Let me start by saying that I was actually told I was the longest of a long shot to succeed Maestro Paul Freeman. I think they were looking for very specifically a conductor of African-American or Latino heritage. And so when I appear on the scene, as a guest conductor for their East Meets West program. No one was thinking that I will become a successor to Paul. And so I showed up at the first rehearsal, and it was love at first sight. The orchestra and I just had this incredible chemistry. So when Maestro Freeman actually handed me the baton, it was a program. One of the programs he really wanted to do was to feature women composers, because he knew women composers have been a neglected minority group in classical music. And so it was very special in multiple levels. Here is an organization that has championed for diversity, and I was so honored to have carry his torch to champion for minority. And in this case, we're talking about our new release recording soon, to continue the work to champion for women composers, which are less than, I think back in 2017, it was definitely less than 2%. It's likely less than 1% of the entire repertoire performed in this country were works by women. And so hopefully with our commitment, and also you started to see the ripple effect around the country, the major orchestras, New York Philharmonic, Philadelphia, I mean, you see one after another following this commitment of, yes, let's take a look at the wonderful works by brilliant women. And we're just so happy to sort of be at the front end of that wave of recognizing that there are incredible works by women that deserved recognition.
So why do you think there is such a persistent gender gap in classical music, even yet today?
You know, it has to do with tradition and how this art form developed over the years. I mean, we're not even talking about conductors. We're just talking about players in the orchestra. And so there is this tradition that was inherited back in hundreds of years ago. If you think about all the composers, J.S. Bach, Mozart, Beethoven, Brahms, you barely can remember any female composers at that time. I mean, take an example of Felix Mendelssohn and Fanny Mendelssohn. That was probably one of the most famous, earliest example of a female composer. And yet, in Fanny's case, Fanny's family was also not supportive of her being a composer. Felix has to publish some of her works under his own name. And so I think you started to see the struggle of women being a very specific role in society and being creative, being sort of a spokesperson in the art form is definitely not one that was acceptable until much later. And so my point is sometimes we just have to take risks and believe that the public will see why it is important for us to do what we do. And it was a very gratifying moment for us to realize that we have honored our founder's vision in programming another woman composer's program to honor him, since that was very historic how he turned the orchestra to me, and to see that we actually were able to make a successful concert for the community of Chicago. It was very moving for us.
And now you're extending that into this new recording, which is called Project W, featuring works by diverse women composers. Let's talk about the individual pieces here. You start off with Florence Price, and this is an arrangement that's a world premiere arrangement. It's not been recorded before. Is that what that means?
Correct. So Florence Price grew up in Little Rock, Arkansas, and she was very capable in writing for orchestras. I mentioned the Chicago Symphony premiere, her symphony in E minor in early 30s. I mean, it was amazing to think thing that the Chicago Symphony just held competitions for composers and soloists. And Florence Price won both first and second prize of that competition, leading to her premiere conducted by Federal Stock, their main conductor, putting her on the main stage of CSO. And, you know, there is a history with CSO that is really beautiful for me personally, because when the Chicago Symphony approached me to make my subscription debut, and Martha Gilmore, who is now the president and CEO of the San Diego Symphony, I'm so grateful to her because she was the one that introduced Florence Price to me. So she said, "Man, I've been waiting for a long time for someone to conduct Florence Price, Mississippi River Suite." And, you know, at that time, I was also music director of the Memphis Symphony. So it just makes sense for me to champion for Florence Price more in multiple angles. And I try to hide my panic express on my face because I didn't know who Florence Price was. So after Martha approached me with my subscription debut, including Florence Price, that's when I started to dig into her music in every way I could. And I found this piece called Dances in the Canebrakes, three charming dances with the cutest titles, Nimble Feet, Tropical Noon, The Silk Hat, and Walking Cane. And it's very nostalgic music. If you think of Ragtime by Joplin, it's capturing a very specific time in our music history, even though the music was inspired by African rhythm. And so I wanted to program the Canebrakes, but it was written for piano. And I discovered her childhood friend, William Grant Still, who many of us consider the dean of African-American composers, has orchestrated for her because after she wrote the Canebrakes pieces for piano, she had a stroke and passed away in 1953. So William Grant Still obviously liked the pieces a lot and orchestrated for orchestra. I don't know how I stumbled onto the pieces. I mean, it was just by coincidence that I knew the pieces existed. And I've since that point on, I've always wanted to dream about making it available on commercial recording so other people could hear and be able to program this. Because in a lot of orchestras championing for standard repertoire, they have very limited length on the concert to include other new and unknown composers, such as Florence Price. So a piece of 10 minutes length is perfect for any orchestra to introduce the audience to Florence Price. And so I'm so excited that it's finally here.
Now, I was curious because one of the things that I noticed is that several of these works do have a dance theme to it. Was this intentional?
Yes.
To have kind of this dance vibe?
Yes. I'm so glad you caught that. It actually stemmed from Florence Price Dances in the Canebrakes as the centerpiece of this album. So it gave us and the composers a direction. What if we explore this very universal theme of dance? Jennifer Higdon's dance card, that was a pure, beautiful coincidence because by the time we were talking about other commissions, Jennifer has already written the dance card for the New Century Chamber Orchestra. And so with these two anchoring pieces, that it just makes sense for us to explore this direction. So it seems to work beautifully.
The dance card piece by Jennifer Higdon. Now, this is a lot of fun for the string players. What do they enjoy most about performing this work?
You know, I love Jennifer's work even before I knew her. It's strong. I love that her music is powerful, challenging. It's never easy, as any musicians will tell you. You have to really work hard on her pieces. It's not something you show up and sight read. And her dance card, you know, by the time I was able to have my hands on the score and the premiere recording, I was so excited because I think it's some of her best works up to date. It has her quintessential rhythm, but this also takes one step further. It has humor, it has extensions of reference in other music that may not be so direct, you know, like The Last Dance has this moment where Jennifer said, think about the Tchaikovsky Serenade or Bartok, you know, that kind of energy. And Celestial Blue, Breeze Serenade, the slow movements are so quintessential for me in terms of when I think of Blue Cathedral, one of her most performed works, and one of the most performed works by American contemporary composers. This sort of taking you to a different place. It's contemplated, yet it's not said. It's almost uplifting, and yet it's very unique and spiritual and personal. You know, it's the Celestial Blue, written in memory of her father. I just feel when I think about Jennifer Higdon representing sort of a very unique American voice, and so proud of her being the woman out there breaking a lot of glass ceilings, even though people don't talk about her being that way, because her work is so unique and deserving that, you know, I think she has already passed the gender barrier in terms of being just a deserving musician that has made an impact in the American musical life.
And boy, isn't that the goal, to try to get to that point where we don't ask if it's a man or a woman composer. We just ask for their name and fall in love with the music.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about this piece that was written by Rena Esmail. And it's a very powerful work on many levels. And it gives the women in the Chicago Sinfonietta a chance to voice their own voice, if you will. And then the composer herself is singing to introduce the piece. And this is all about letting their voices be heard. Will you please talk about this piece called #MeToo?
Yes. I can't really think of another classical composer that's able to combine traditional Hindustani music, Hindustani is more North Indian, with symphonic music. I mean, that just takes a tremendous skills in both genres, in both cultures, to be able to cross that bridge and forge a unique language. And Rena is somebody you fall in love the first time you meet. She has the most bubbly personalities of all the young composers I know. I just love being with her and this energy, this possibilities. She looks at everything so optimistic, and she talks so fast that you might really have to like stay with her to understand everything she is expressing. And so when we approached Rina, I think all of her compositions to that point has always been an Indian title of some sort, because that's really her calling. She really wanted to incorporate a lot of the Indian ragas. That's basically sort of the melodic materials that's passed down through generations, and you have to learn stuff. I'm going to demonstrate a little bit. I don't know if you can hear my clapping. So this is tala, which is more of the rhythmic part of the Indian music. So for example, da da ka di na dum, da da ka da ka di na dum, da da ka di na dum, da ka da ka di na. Nadin gudam, nadin gudam, nadin gudam. So they're trained in all these oral skills, and the pitch structure is very different compared to our Western. They have what we think as more like the microtones, and so it's really hard when you're trying to sing out of tune. Trying to be purposely sing out of tune to Western ears, it's really a skill to acquire. And so two things. When she was writing this piece, she has to come to grapple with her own experience. And she approached us and said, would it be okay for her to change the title to #MeToo? And immediately we were like, please, please, we are so supportive. Do whatever you feel is the best. And she was very grateful for our support. And when she came to the rehearsal, I have to literally have her talk a little bit about the piece, the background, but literally have her sing the ragas that she has incorporated into the orchestra work. We thought, you know what, we should capture this on the disc. So when people hear her ragas, hear her materials and how she wanted to express that, and then when they hear the piece, they will understand it a lot more. So Rina taking it one step further, honoring the woman's voice in the orchestra she had in the score, specific place where the woman in the orchestra will start singing. And at first, our musicians are very timid, you know, nobody wants to really stand out. And we have to encourage that singing to come through because it's part of what's unique about the piece, the voices of the women. And I'm proud to say that these women make their vocal debut with the Chicago Sinfonietta disc. And it's one work that I think is very powerful. It's her own personal journey, but it crossed that beautiful bridge of forging the two languages so beautifully together.
Jesse Montgomery wrote a piece called Coincident Dances. And she is a violinist with the Catalyst Quartet and obviously also a composer. Can you talk a little bit about how she fused together many different sound worlds and dance types to create this piece?
Yeah, I think with Jesse, you know, living in New York City, I think it's one of the best places where you hear all these different cultural influences on a almost on a regular basis. So I think I remember she and I going through the score over the phone, and she will say, well, here is a section that's more like the English consort, you know, the Baroque music. That's probably a concert she was attending. But on the way there, she was in a car, and then you hear this sort of hip-hop in one car, just positioned across with another car with samba's music. You know what I mean? It's just walking in New York City, you hear all this interesting cultural intersecting with each other, and that's what she tried to capture here. It's very interesting bits of different musical genres mashed together in a very intelligent way, and it somehow all makes sense. And she has also given us some very difficult rhythmic challenge. We have to just go by instincts. I remember looking at the meter thinking, wow, how do we count this? And when she sang it to me, I'm like, okay, I got it. And that's what I did. I sang it to the musician and said, I just tried to get the vibe of it. And so I think it's really tracing back to being in her shoe, of being in that great city of welcoming so many culture, and it's all sort of intersecting and impacting each other and morphing into something that's unique on its own.
The newly commissioned work that Clarice Assad wrote was originally written with dancers in mind. Can you talk a little bit about her piece, which is called Without Borders?
Yes, Infanteras. It's, you know, Clarice grew up in the family that her father and her uncle, the Assad brothers, for those of you who love guitar music, it's a famous duo coming out of Brazil. And so growing up in that household, you probably have all kinds of music influencing you. And actually, I think her father always had a residence in Chicago. And so Chicago has been a very special place for Clarice's education as well. So this piece really is her a musical biography of the musical tradition of South America. North America, without borders. You know, music can cross barriers better than probably a lot of other communication forms. And so here is a wonderful musical journey crossing many landscapes, if you will. Coming together with, originally in the premiere, was with a dance troupe that added choreography to this new work. But for the disc, we just thought that we will honor her work, just present the musical form for people to have the pure imagination, what it could be have like to have dance choreography with it. And so I think this is a very catchy music. Many of the melodies, I remember hearing it and not being able to get out of my head for days. And I think Clarice has come up with a wonderful work for us, capturing the different genres, that the pulsating rhythm. It's wonderful. I think one of my favorite work by Clarice Assad, for sure.
Mayan Chen talking about her new recording with the Chicago Sinfonietta. It's titled Project W, Celebrating Diverse Women Composers. Special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode of New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julia Mocker.